Billy, do you mean? For example, when the development of the physical body has already been completed. By this, I mean that a shape-shifting can be accomplished when, Quetzal, 31. That is the meaning of my words, yes. Billy, shape-shifting, then one could very well call these humans shape-shifters. Can they change, then, also their external and internal features, apart from their shapes? Quetzal, 32? That is correct. Billy, you have not yet answered my question, however, as to why you said concerned and was. Quetzal, 33. Gilgamesh's people no longer exists because a sudden and unpredictable planetary catastrophe caused the whole race to become extinct within a few minutes. 34. There were no survivors because no human beings of this people also stayed outside of the planet. 35. Gilgamesh is, thus, the sole survivor, who has adapted his shape, however, to that of the earthly human and has morphogenetically transformed and found a new home in this world, which he no longer wants to leave. Billy, oh, so that's how it is. Then something else, you recently said something about a water shortage that would be on Earth in the coming time. Quetzal, 36. Yes. 37. Already in the coming 90s, the drinking water on Earth will become a rare commodity in certain countries. 38. Thus, there will be a big drinking water problem that, especially in the so-called developing countries, will lead to very big problems and even to catastrophes. 39. In contrast to this, however, the encouraging fact will arise that some areas, which have been destroyed and made barren by the Earth people, will slowly recover again purely according to nature and become green. 40. Nevertheless, this process will only proceed slowly and bring success, always provided that everything won't be newly ruined and destroyed again by the people, which is to be feared, unfortunately, when one considers their illogical and profit-demanding thinking and behavior. Billy, this fear probably exists rightfully. Then I once again have a question regarding the Egyptian pyramids, as I was also asked about them. Unfortunately, I no longer remember exactly what to Samjace, and ask it explained to me, but somehow, I think it was said to me that the first pyramids were built around 73,300 years ago or so, but later dismantled again because they fell to decay, namely through rotting in the interior as well as through the weather. In particular, this refers to the pyramids of Giza but also to many other pyramids all over the world. Afterwards, everything was rebuilt, which should have happened around 10,800 or 11,000 years ago. At this time, about 300 years before the Great Flood, a certain King Saluk was the person of power, who ordered the dismantling and alteration of the Great Pyramid of Giza and allowed this to be carried out. But again, everything moldered over the course of the following millennia and fell to decay, so about 4,500 years ago, an enormous pyramid work resulted once more, as everything that was moldering and decaying was torn away, removed, and replaced. Thus, accordingly, new stone blocks were cut and then dragged and set up by human power. At the same time, the main pyramid completely lost its internal structure and organization, and it was built anew under the strict power of Cheops and completely revamped. Therefore, one can very well say that the current pyramid of Giza can actually also be called the Pyramid of Cheops, even though its actual origin traces back to other and partly Earth foreign builders from the constellation of Orion, and indeed, to a time of two stellar ages ago, one of which is reckoned as around 36,650 years, and thus, in a 2x form, yields a time of 73,300 years, whereby this time must be set before the Islamic Hegira, however. And when we speak of the Pyramid of Giza, we always speak of the pyramid that must be seen as the original pyramid, even if today, the new production is addressed, which is, of course, already about 4,500 years old and is exposed to rotting and decay, and which also no longer exhibits its original measure of 152.5 meters in height but only 146 or 148 meters. This Great Pyramid, together with the others, is aligned in its formatting to the constellation of Orion, while the Khafre structure, I mean the Sphinx structure, was aligned to the constellation of Leo. The new pyramid, as well as all the others and the Sphinx structure, were built in more recent times, so about 4,500 years ago, solely by Earth people, by their own forces. The builders were early Egyptians, like also the largest part of the workers, who were free people and artisans to a certain part, while many others, who came in small numbers as slaves from other countries, had to perform their hard work, together with a small number of domestic slaves. That majority of the workers, however, was based on free Egyptians. For the purpose of the nourishment of all workforces, a veritable industrial food city was built near the pyramid, and also mass campsites were provided for resting and sleeping, as well as tombs for the many deceased, who were at work there. That's how I remember it being explained to me by you. Now, is this right, or did I fall into a fallacy? Quetzal, 41. Everything is correct, so therefore, no further explanation is necessary. Billy, already several times, we've talked about gene technology and gene manipulation, etc., about which a lot of senseless fuss will be made in the coming time, and indeed, especially by the so-called progress opponents and, in this case, even the genetic opponents, who will conjure up death and the devil with absurd assertions and scare tactics, in order to thwart, stop, and denigrate genetic research and gene technology. This in ignorance of the fact that already for many years, genetically modified vegetables, fruits, and other foods have been produced and have been on the market and have also been eaten by the genetic opponents unknowingly and without hesitation as well as without harm. Now, the question about this is whether this fact will actually be concealed much longer? Quetzal, 42. Silence will probably rule over this for good, because otherwise, an uproar would be caused by the genetic opponents. Billy, I understand. Since ancient times, maniacs have always had a tendency to run amok at every possible and impossible opportunity or otherwise to become abusive. I have also just experienced this again, regarding that which I wrote in one of my stories in the storybook, that in the atmosphere, the finest dust particles are needed, in which the natural water vapor can condense itself, so that raindrops can develop and, thus, it can rain. One insulted me rather nastily on the telephone and yelled that I shouldn't write such crap and mislead the children with it and so on. But Sfith already taught me that it actually is in such a way as I have written. And if I remember correctly, he called the atmospheric dust particles aerosols. Quetzal, 43. You have written no falsehoods because the process of rain formation actually takes place in the way that you have represented everything. 44. And the term aerosols also corresponds to the truth. Billy, then once again, I would like to come to speak on the greenhouse effect and on the climate change. A subject that we've already discussed several times. One thing has escaped me, however, namely what the sun produces on the earth through its energies, which contributes to the greenhouse effect and to the climate change. The earth person's destructive influence on the nature of the planet, that is on the atmosphere, takes place through the releasing of carbon dioxide and bromine gases as well as through the actual chlorofluorocarbons or CFCs for short. Through these substances, so you have explained, a coat or layer, so to speak, is formed around the Earth, by what means the solar heat reflected by the Earth can no longer escape into outer space. From this, an accumulation of heat arises, by what means even the greenhouse effect emerges, but this isn't solely evoked by the fault of human beings, but rather, to the same extent, also by the Sunday. However, this doesn't mean that the Earth person's guilt for the greenhouse effect and for the climate change should be minimized and that the cause for it should be imputed to the sun alone, as the irresponsible scientists in the coming time will do, as you've explained. To be sure, your explanation was that the sun influences the Earth's climate to a very great extent and, thus, also immensely contributes to the climate change and to the greenhouse effect, but at the same time, also very much is done by human beings, even, for example, through the enormous worldwide emissions of hydrocarbons, bromine gases, and CFCs, along with many other emissions of a climate-damaging nature. Now, from time to time, so I mean in large time intervals, especially strong and extremely great and extensive activities arise on the sun, through which enormous quantities of radiation are released and hurled out into space, which then inevitably hit the Earth and influence its entire planetary climate. And exactly this is what it concerns now, that is, this is the specific stuff that it basically concerns here, which acts so powerfully that a greenhouse effect and climate change arise, which also appeared at other times than at the present because major causes for this also lie with humans, also stepped into appearance, and can also appear in the future. This is in stark contrast to when periods of very low solar activity arise, through which very cold times or even glaciation can be caused on Earth. Quetzal, 45. You have given an extensive explanation, which shows great knowledge of the addressed matter. 46. Indeed, you amaze me again and again. Billy, it's all half as bad, for on the one hand, Sveth taught me a lot of knowledge in this respect, but on the other hand, I also learned a lot at school, even though I was a big truant, and moreover, I'm also learning constantly through professional books, professional articles in newspapers and magazines, as well as through professional television broadcasts. But now, what is the specific substance of the sun, through which the greenhouse climate and the climate change on the Earth are promoted? Quetzal, 47. There are several of these, but the most important factor is formed by carbon-14, as it finds its entrance into earthly climatology as a name. Billy, so my long speech did have a sense, nevertheless, because it's probably important to know this. But then, now something else. Professor Sander, I already told you once of him, asked me, since you deal with the prehistoric geology of the Earth, do you know anything about the so-called oceanic Nazca Plate, that is the Nazca Plateau, or know where its origin is to be sought? Quetzal, 48. The origin of the Nazca Plateau was at a very different place than where it is located today. 49. Around 33 million years ago, it was located about 2,000 kilometers further west in the ocean. 50. The plateau was a volcanic underwater world, on which there were quite enormous volcanic mountains, whose highest peaks protruded far above the ocean's surface, creating a large island archipelago that was surrounded by beautiful paradise reefs. 51. Over the course of millions of years, however, the underwater world sank about 1,500 meters into the depths of the ocean. 52. For my part, the knowledge of the professor, in terms of his knowledge of the Nazca Plate, would interest me. Billy, I will raise an appropriate question with him. Then one last question, after which we can talk about other things that aren't to be mentioned officially. The Earth, as I have already seen several times from outer space, somehow continuously changes in its shape and sometimes looks not quite round and dented. I've seen this through your fantastic devices, which Samjas showed me, by what means this phenomenon became known to me. Can you tell me the reason why our planet continuously deforms itself and exhibits bulges as well as depressions? Do our scientists already know this at all? Quetzal, 53. To my knowledge, this fact is still unknown among the Earth people. 54. The reason for the daily changing, uneven regularity of the planet, which exhibits a certain elliptical shape, is to be found in the fact that depending on the density of the matter and the water masses, a change in gravity or gravitational force results. 55. This means that the density of the water masses and the solid matter changes continually, and indeed, uninterruptedly. 56. Through this, for example, large areas with higher densities of matter or water swell out in a bump-shaped manner, by what means even bulges emerge. 57. The areas opposing these collapse in and form depressions or craters when a low density of matter or water masses is given, as was explained to me by Tua. 58. An additional role is played by the moon, which also must be involved in these processes. Billy, but now, a few more things still come to my mind, which I would like to ask you, as it follows from your explanations. Life on Earth originated in the water, whereby it then developed in the shore sand of the waters. This is in complete contrast to the claims of the earthly scientists, whose explanations purport that life had developed from the so-called primordial soup. If I still remember correctly, completely in accordance with your information, life is to have originated in the fresh waters of the Earth. Seas, however, are very salty, at least here on Earth, whereby the highly sensitive genetic material and outer covers of the first organisms would have probably been destroyed because salt water is extremely aggressive, and the life forms that emerged first were still highly susceptible to such influences. So I ask myself, what type of water was given then, in which life could evolve, before it could also find its way in salt water at a later time? Quetzal, 59. The salt water of primeval times was actually very aggressive in the primordial seas and contained values that were twice and three times as high as those of the current salt concentrations in the earthly seas. 60. Thus, life also did not originate in these salty primordial seas, which were also partly strong in potassium but rather in smaller and larger land waters, in small and large ponds, as well as in small or larger lakes, which consisted of fresh water that arose from torrential rains. Billy, then still this, on my great journey with Samjay Santu in his great spacer, we also flew to the so-called Andromeda Nebula, as this enormous structure is erroneously called by the earthly astronomers because they just assume that it would concern a galactic nebula. But as I could see with my own eyes, this structure is not a nebula but an enormous galaxy, in which many solar systems exist with their own planets, a large number of which also carries diverse and even human life. My question, why do the earthly astronomers constantly say that Andromeda is a nebula? Do they actually not know that it is a galaxy with suns and planets and all the trimmings, which exactly constitutes a real galaxy? Quetzal, 61. This fact is still unknown to them, therefore, they also speak of an Andromeda Nebula. 62. This is due, not in the least, to the fact that their astronomical instruments are not yet sufficient to be able to see the reality of the Andromeda Galaxy. 63. Their instruments are still too insufficient to be able to recognize more than just a nebula at a distance of about 2 million light years away, which is the distance from the Earth to the Andromeda Galaxy. 64. In the newer time, however, this will change, and to be sure, in the coming 90s or at the beginning of the new millennium at the latest, when the Hubble Space Telescope fulfills its function. Billy, that was my last question. Then we can now turn to the other things. 223rd Contact, Sunday, May 1st, 1988, 9:07 a.m. Billy, dear friend, today, I once again have some questions regarding various things, if you have enough time. Quetzal, 1. There is nothing that would call me back urgently. 2. So therefore, bring forward your questions. Billy, you, as well as Tu and Samjay, once played the strange humming sounds of the earth to me through your apparatuses, which I can't perceive in nature, unfortunately, because my hearing senses aren't so sensitive that I could hear these sounds, which should very well be possible for other people, however, as you've explained. The sources of these sounds are very diverse, as your cognition yields, and these or similar sounds should, according to your information, also appear on other worlds as well as on asteroids, comets, meteors, suns, and dark clouds, as well as with cosmic nebulae and even in every black hole, etc., so not only on Earth. All electromagnetic waves, as well as the northern lights and solar winds, etc., belong to these sound sources. You named the sounds Symphony of the Earth or Symphony of the Planets as well as Symphony of Space, which is also entirely incorporated into these sounds, like also the atmospheres of planets and suns and even all material and immaterial things of every kind, concerning which you've spoken of a symphony of the spheres. This symphony, that is these sounds, are, so far, still unknown to the earthly scientists in particular and to the people in general, other than just the exceptions to the rule, even those people who perceive these humming sounds, that is symphony of the earth, and who are of the opinion that something isn't right in their heads, and thus, not that real things are going to and fro. Can you once again officially explain what it actually concerns with these humming sounds, if it shouldn't remain a secret? Quetzal, 3. It does not have to remain a secret because in about 10 to 15 years, a portion of the earthly sciences should also encounter these things. 4. Moreover, it concerns the fact that every planet, every comet, every larger asteroid, meteor, and every sun, as well as the nebulae and clouds in space and space itself, as well as every black hole and all material and immaterial things existing at all produce certain tones and sounds, which we, as you said, actually call symphony. 5. Within the entire realm of the creation or of the universe, nothing exists that would not be incorporated into these symphonies, so therefore, all material and immaterial things vibrationally generate certain tones and sounds and even symphonies, which usually cannot be perceived by the human ear because these move in too low or too high frequencies for this. 6. Only through abnormal, degenerative, physiological changes can these sounds or symphonies be perceived by human life forms, whereby these then become effective in an extremely consciousness-impairing, nerve-wracking, and psyche-damaging manner. 7. The frequencies of these symphonies or sounds reach into all levels, so thus, the lowest sounds, like humming sounds, as you say, are given as well as the highest whirring sounds and shimmering sounds, etc. 8. As the frequencies are virtually countless in their number, these are also the sources of the sound symphonies, for these relate to all that exists of the material and immaterial. 9. Thus, if one starts from the earth, then these sound sources are, for example, the waters, in terms of the deep sea movements as well as the movements of the waters of the lakes, rivers, streams, creeks, and springs. 10. Even the roar of the waves, the small and mighty storms, the tectonic movements of the earth's interior, the bubbling of magma in the earth, and the eruptions of the volcanoes belong to these, as well as the rain, hail, and the various layers of the atmosphere, which rub against each other, as well as the winds against the trees, grasses, flowers, houses, mountains, sand dunes and deserts, steppes, icebergs, glaciers, and surfaces of ice, as well as against windmills, wind turbines, ships, aircraft, rockets, missiles, and vehicles of all types, against land surfaces and everything else that materially exists. 11. Also to be noted are the voices and sounds of humans and animals, insects, birds, and fish and any other water creatures. 12. All sounds together form the actual symphony of the planet, as we call it. 13. And as this happens in the purely material realm, so this also happens in any immaterial sphere in the entire universe, each of which also produces its own symphony, like also fog flowing on the earth or nebulae existing in space and all other formations that are absolutely impossible to sight in their number because everything is so immeasurable that it could neither be grasped by purely human understanding nor by technological possibilities of any kind. Billy, thanks. And since we're already at it, I would like to come to speak again on the black hole of our Milky Way, of which we spoke, if I remember correctly, on the 30th of May, 1987. By its attractive force, We don't simply fly with our sol system uncontrollably out into space, but rather are somehow still held within the Milky Way. There are, indeed, black holes in every galaxy, as you explained, which some Jason 2 already said, but in addition to these, there are still the black wanderers, as you call those kinds of black holes that drift through the cosmos. Tua also said that in this regard, there would be two types, precisely the black holes that drift wildly through the universe and then the others that are galaxy-bound and, thus, draw a certain course in or through a galaxy and its surroundings. And all black holes have an attractive force that depends on size and that reaches up to hundreds or even millions of light-years away. And here, I would now like to ask if also with or in our galaxy, such a wandering black hole exists, a galaxy-wandering black hole, so to speak, if I may name this thing in such a way? Quetzal, 14. That is a good designation, which I will include in my vocabulary. 15. Yes, there actually is such a black wanderer or wandering black hole in the realm of your galaxy. 16. Nevertheless, it is a smaller structure than what the actual central black hole of the Milky Way is. 17. But still, it is very remarkable and draws an extensive course through the galaxy, and to be sure, at around 6,400 light-years of distance from the actual center of the Milky Way. 18. In addition to this black wanderer, there are still some other wandering black holes in the nearer and further surroundings of the galaxy, one of which, from time to time, also exerts a determining influence on the planet Venus of the Sol system. Billy, I understand. Then something else, do you know, to what religious persuasion Chmanuel's parents Mary and Joseph belonged, what this was, and from where the two actually came? Were they actually Nazarenes? A pastor, who is very partial to my contacts with you, asked me whether you would know anything about this. Unfortunately, I have never attended to these interests myself and, thus, haven't tried to find out something. Quetzal, 19. The facts about Mary and Joseph are very well known to me, which you know very well. So I do not understand why you present yourself as ignorant in this respect. Billy, I naturally know about your knowledge of the matter. The dumb question is whether you would know the answer. I simply slipped unintentionally. Excuse me, please. Quetzal, 20. I understand. -21. To answer the first part of your question, Mary and Joseph didn't belong to any religious persuasion. 22. They were natives of Tiberias, a place located at the Sea of Galilee at that time. 23. Mary was the daughter of a merchant family from Tiberias, and Joseph was the son of a shipbuilder and carpenter's family, which was also located in Tiberias. 24. And if you still want to have information about the two families, then I can say that Mary had 3 brothers and 4 sisters, and Joseph had 3 brothers and 2 sisters. 25. At the time of Jmanuel's birth, all siblings and parents of Mary and Joseph were still alive. 26. What is still to be said, but which should also be well known to you, 27. Joseph was not the biological father but rather the foster father of Jmanuel. 28. The biological father was the extraterrestrial Gabriel. Billy, yes. I know the history relating to this. Well, I once again have a question about the greenhouse effect on Earth, about which we've already spoken several times. In this connection, you said that the glaciers will melt rapidly all over the world, but what about the so-called perpetual snow on the high mountains here in Switzerland, on the Himalayas, and on all high mountains of the world in general? Quetzal, 29. The age-old snow and ice fields of all mountains will also be affected by the great melting process, so even the Himalayas, with which you surely also mean Mount Everest, whose masses of ice and snow will have melted away approximately by the year 2030, if the warming process still rises further. 30. As I already explained at an earlier date, however, two factors are involved in this process approximately equally, On the one hand, the Earth person, with his senseless destruction of the environment, etc., and, on the other hand, the normal processes of nature, through which periodic, planet-wide climate changes are caused, which are acute in the present and near future time and will further spread.